This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, boys and girls. Thank you so much for tuning in. A special thanks to the folks in Lovingston at the 94.7. We will be talking about holidays today, and thank you to our special guest, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology. Professor?
Good morning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to be here. And let me take the time to thank Dixon Disposal. They support WNRN. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or 434-978-2111. All right. Thank you so much for being here. And let's jump in, you know, because this is a holiday time of year. This program is pre-recorded, by the way. So no calls, just pleasant listening to the professor and I. But it is a holiday time of year. Let's start with Christmas, because Christmas is certainly a big holiday here in the United States, and it is celebrated around the world or in many other places around the world. And I want to learn more. I've only been here. It's the only place I've spent my time is in the United States. Tell me, what is the background for Christmas?
Christmas is traditionally a Christian holiday. The idea of a holiday at this time of the year, roughly between the winter solstice and our new year, goes back very much farther than that. Into pre-Christian times, it was associated with the Roman Saturnalia, which was what we could call a role reversal holiday, a holiday in which the normal order of things was overturned, and the Romans would like to think of themselves at the Saturnalia as going back to the golden age when the god Saturn, who was the god of time, ruled. So it was a bit something like a carnival, you know, when a different order of events reigns, things like that.
Well, tell me more about Saturnalia. So it's a Roman holiday, and that is what Christmas, at least in the American vision of things, has evolved from?
No, not at all. Not exactly. The Saturnalia is another holiday at that particular time of the year that is around the solstice, when people all over Northern Europe celebrated festivals kind of like the Jewish Hanukkah, which is a festival of lights. People in Germany, the Celtic countries, Scandinavia would light big bonfires to more or less celebrate the return of the sun after the 21st. The solstice celebrations, the Germans call them Sonnenwende, the turning of the sun, are very important to the placement of Christmas as well. There is another thing too, which is a very ancient tradition that goes back in England and was ancestral for the traditional English Christmas called Wassail, the Anglo-Saxon English Christmas called Wassail. This one probably goes, it's like a topsy-turvy festival. It probably goes back to pre-Celtic England, possibly back about 5,000 years or more. It's called the Bean King. It's celebrated, a version of it is celebrated in England today, and in the United States too, it's the English will bake a Christmas pudding and put a coin in it, and whoever gets the piece of pudding with a coin in it gets to be the Lord of Misrule. They give certain assignments or tasks or challenges to people, and if the people don't do them, then they give punishments to them.
All right, I want to come back to that, because anything that's misrule sounds especially exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But Christmas. So Christmas doesn't come from directly from Saturnalia. It has a little bit here and there, because that's something that you, I know that I've seen a television show or two or movie that seems to, some character who maybe the is either showing off their all the information that they know, and or maybe mocking someone else, and that's what it all comes back to. Is you're not celebrating Christmas, you're celebrating Saturnalia, or your tree doesn't come from that, it comes from Saturnalia.
The tree, it's a little bit Hanukkah-like. It comes, the Christmas tree with the lights and stuff comes from Germany. Santa Claus comes from the Netherlands. It's a Dutch custom, probably diffused in the United States from New Amsterdam, from the Dutch colony where New York is today. The Santa stuff was elaborated from that, and particularly in Upper New York State with the author of The Night Before Christmas, who gave us most of the Santa myth all at once.
Another Moore from the Moore family here. Rick Moore hosting today's Sunday morning wake-up call, a pre-recorded program. Please enjoy that as you enjoy your Sunday. Our guest today, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology, as we talk about Christmas and holidays around the world. So Christmas in the United States, it's certainly a lot different today than it was even 50 years ago. You mentioned 'Twas the Night Before Christmas having a major, being a major part of how things have evolved. When was that originally written?
It was actually during the Victorian era, sometime in the middle 1800s. And it gave most of the details of the Santa reindeer coming down the chimney myth, put them all in order, more or less, as a poem that could be read to children, and pretty much set the Santa and reindeer myth, the presence myth, in order. Let me tell you something about the presence stuff. I mean, that stuff came in with the Dutch version into New Amsterdam. The original Santa Claus was a Dutch guy named Sinterklaas, and he went around with a servant or helper who was often thought to be a chimney sweep, okay? And this is the origin of getting coal in your stocking if you're a bad kid.
I have never received coal in my stocking.
Yeah, me either. I think it's far too expensive, and it's also harmful for the environment. I think they cut this out back in New Amsterdam or something. This is the traditional myth, which pretty much stayed with us through the two world wars and started to assume, I guess, its modern shape during the Cold War, something like that.
You talk about Sinterklaas coming from Norwegian area?
Dutch, from the Netherlands, yeah.
And you mentioned several German traditions that seem to have found their way into the current American understanding of Christmas.
Right.
Tell me more about how Christmas in the United States matches up to Christmas in Germany today, and the difference between that, and or has it all evolved due to mass media and and everyone being able to get together through transportation and et cetera, where it's all pretty much the same thing.
What I think, I mean, I've used to work and live in Papua New Guinea, which is certainly not a Northern European country. The people there, on the whole, the educated people, but many of the people in villages, are perfectly aware of what Christmas is like in the United States. They may at times try to imitate it, because American Christmas or American European Christmas is actually publicized and broadcast all over the world. It is in the magazines that they read, many of which come from this country. It's on the media in the cases where they can receive telecasts or radio broadcasts from the United States. I think there's no question but that notion of Christmas, however it might be locally celebrated, that notion of Christmas is worldwide. I don't actually know how Germans celebrate Christmas right now. I know how Australians celebrate Christmas.
How's that?
I've spent Christmas in New Guinea and Australia several times. Australian people like to have their Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve, and they exchange presents at that time. They do not, to my knowledge, put them under a Christmas tree. Usually their Christmas is in the middle of the hot season, in the middle of summer, which is very exhilarating, actually. It's not much like our Christmas, but that's summer. December is summer in Australia. They're somewhat more genteel and laid back about Christmas than Americans are. But they may also have another meal on Christmas Day, but the high point of it is Christmas Eve for Australians.
We are talking about Christmas and holidays around the world. Professor Roy Wagner, UVA's Department of Anthropology, here joining us on the Wake Up Call. Happy holidays to those of you listening today. This is a pre-recorded program so that Professor and I can be celebrating our holiday time with family and friends. Professor, you mentioned Hanukkah several mm-hmm. times earlier yeah. in the program about light. And I'm not Jewish, and I know very little about Hanukkah, but one of my beliefs or misbeliefs is that much of Hanukkah has a part of fasting to it. Is that correct, or is that completely illogical?
It's not so much fasting. They will serve latke, which is a type of pancakes. They will the kids will spin dreidels for good luck, which is tops. The Hanukkah is originally from I guess the Middle East, but also a lot of the Jewish people were from Eastern Europe. Hanukkah is more or less their way, the Jewish way, of doing the festival of lights for the turning of the sun, occurring near the solstice. I'd like to add something here. It came up a little while ago about the 12 days of Christmas, okay?
There's a lovely song about the 12 days of Christmas, etc.
Right.
And so it's a part of Christmas tradition, at least American Christmas tradition.
Sure, and especially English Christmas tradition. What would happen in the 12 days of Christmas, say in the Elizabethan period in England, would be that playwrights like Shakespeare were like busy the whole time. They would put on performances, the 20, 30 plays put on in those 12 days. Shakespeare's troupe would play this for Queen Elizabeth and King James, who followed. The idea is an interesting one. I mean, there was feasting and plays being put on, festival for the whole 12 days. This is connected to the Lord of Misrule stuff I mentioned earlier.
Right.
In the original pre-Celtic thing in of the early Britons, they would bake a cake or something or a pudding and put a bean in it. Whoever got the bean got to be the Lord of Misrule, or the Bean King.
Is that the celebration for having a vegetable in your dessert?
They didn't have a lot of coins back then, so they used the bean. But the idea was that he would act as the Lord of Misrule and get people to do crazy things like hazing at a fraternity or something like that. And if they didn't do them, give them punishments. This the reign of Misrule would go on for 12 days.
Oh, starting from?
Christmas.
Starting from Christmas
because
Day?
Because you have like the coin or the bean in your pudding on Christmas, the Christmas dinner, you see? And so for the 12 days after that, the Lord of Misrule held sway, had his reign, and then they'd kill him. They'd sacrifice him for good prosperity in the
Truly?
Next year. Oh, I mean, yeah. They used to do that a lot. The pre-Celtic folks in the British Isles, we don't even know what languages they spoke, but they were probably the guys that built Stonehenge. They did a lot of sacrificing, and the Celts did too, actually. A lot of human sacrifice. This was stopped when Christianity came into the area, of course. But basically, the 12 days of Christmas are a remnant of the Bean King, the Lord of Misrule. This is what Boxing Day means. You'll right. notice on your calendar it says Boxing Day.
The 26th.
26th. That's the first of these days that follow Christmas. It's day number two, and then there's 10 more, right? And Boxing Day is a day of role reversal. Traditionally in England, people of low social status got to be like the Bean King, even though they did not sacrifice them, and got to go around lording it over the other people, giving them orders, acting like the leaders of society. That was the idea of wassail. Wassail is very much like Halloween, which is a related holiday. In wassail, the wealthy people had to put out lots of food and drink and sort of rum punches and things like this for the lower classes to eat. And the lower class, the London street mob, would come into their houses and drink themselves silly and have a great time. If the wealthy did not do this, the lower classes would trash their houses. It's like trick or treat.
Really?
Yeah. It's a version of the Bean King and Misrule, and it links Christmas to Halloween. They're very similar holidays in one sense, because on Halloween, it's the kids who are kind of our modern lower class, right? That come around, go around, and I mean, they're status inferiors, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. You haven't been hanging out in public with the parents these days.
I was a parent. Yeah. And I don't think I'll ever be released from it. So I do understand a little bit about that. But the idea is that, you know, you're supposed to give kids goodies so they don't like do little pranks on your lawn.
Right, they're not supposed to toilet paper your trees and
something
things
like that.
That.
Yeah, yeah, wax your windows or worse things. But that is part of the Lord of Misrule idea. Like Boxing Day, it's role reversal. So is Thanksgiving. Let's look at the myths for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Halloween. Well, Halloween doesn't have much of a myth except pumpkins. But Thanksgiving, remember the first Thanksgiving when the pilgrims invited the Indians over to share their meal with them? That's wassail. That's like the wealthy people inviting the people from the street to come in and share their dinner.
I always thought wassail was some sort of alcoholic beverage that they had.
Yeah, that's what they served to these guys that came in off the streets.
All right, 20 minutes after the hour. Thank you for tuning in today. Happy holidays from WNRN and the folks on the Sunday morning wake-up call. We are talking about holidays around the world, Christmas and similar holidays. Professor Roy Wagner from the UVA Department of Anthropology.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being here with us. And support for WNRN comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where your happiness is their priority. At Blue Ridge, you can return gear and apparel purchases at any time for any reason. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. Back with our guest, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology. Professor, we were talking about the 12 days of Christmas.
Right.
I had always heard, and apparently this is not true, that the 12 days for Christmas were the 12 days it took the wise men to get from where they were to where they needed to be by following the star. Does this have anything to do?
Oh, no, that's the perfectly valid explanation. It's part of the Christianization of Christmas. The Bean King, the Lord of Misrule, the 12 Days of Christmas in that respect was a festive time when things were turned topsy-turvy. Actors who were not thought to be the very best people in Elizabethan England were allowed to play kings and queens. And this is regarded as very risque, very audacious. Actors were thought to be, you know, kind of disreputable people. They were, you know, so that basically you've got, that's the secular part of it. The religious part of it had to do with grafting on a great deal of a religious significance. Let's try one of them. You mentioned the wise men taking that long, and indeed there are Christmas carols that of that kind.
Camels don't move that fast.
Camels don't move that fast, and God knows what they do in the snow in Northern Europe, but... Although the three wise men are sometimes called the three kings of Cologne, and that's getting up there in the Germany. That's getting up there in the snow country, right?
Oh, I thought you meant the frankincense and myrrh part.
Well, it was that kind of Cologne.
The smelly Cologne, not the location.
Well, no, but it's Köln, the German city of Köln, but... No, the frankincense is just kind of what they brought with them. And frankincense is a thing that grows on the Arabian Peninsula, way far south. It's a real thing. In some gift catalogs, you can actually buy it for people for Christmas. I think I did.
That's one. For the person who has everything.
Except, of course, frankincense. Or maybe you can get myrrh, too.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, here, you have some myrrh. Well, okay, so the Christianization of Christmas, which... takes up a good bit of the meaning. I mean, you've got the Santa Claus myth, which we've discussed already. We've got the wassail Lord of Misrule, topsy-turvy part of it, which I've also mentioned. And you have the Christmas, the Christian part. Christmas is supposed to be Christmas, a mass for, you know, for the Savior, for Jesus Christ. And this is very, very important. That is associated with the Nativity. For many people, or most people, religious-wise, the Nativity is the big Christmas story. That's the one you'll hear not only, you know, in presentations today, when it can get time from A Christmas Story, is hitting a little close to home for me. It's about Cleveland, that movie, and Gene Shepard's movie, and I came from there. And when I was a little kid, I looked just like Ralphie. And I used to work at the Higbee store in downtown Cleveland, where little Ralphie is looking through the windows at the toys. So that's a little close to home.
Is that based on your life? Did you want a BB gun when you were a kid?
Yeah, but they'd never give me one.
Yeah,
but
my mother wouldn't let me have one either.
No, but no, the little Ralphie lived considerably before I grew up. I mean, he was back in the 30s or something like that. But other than that, it is so close to what it was like, what Cleveland was like at that time. That makes me sort of blush and I get a little embarrassed about it. Okay, so now the nativity, the birth of Christ in a manger, according to the story, which is very old, which is celebrated in, for instance, Bach's Christmas Oratorio, a really beautiful piece of music. It goes way back to the Middle Ages, this idea of celebrating the nativity, Navidad, as the Spanish call it, the nativity at Christmas time. That's probably the most important religious feature of the whole thing. It's probably not the time of the year when Christ was born. He was probably born at a time when shepherds are watching their flocks by night. And they don't do that in December. The flocks would be frozen stiff. So,
but this was in
the Holy Land. It gets
right,
colder.
But in the Holy Land, I mean, again,
it gets colder.
I haven't traveled there.
Okay, when March is lambing season. The reason the shepherds are out there watching their flocks is to keep the wolves and jackals off of the little lambs. That also buys into another part of the Christian mythos, which is that the priest or bishop is like a shepherd, which is why he carries a crozier, a crook. Okay, and he's protecting his flock. That is, they identify the members, parishioners, with the sheep that the shepherd was watching. So there's a very big part of Christian mythos that comes from that. Shepherds don't watch their flocks by night in Christmas. However, by other standards, at this time of the year, we've got a whole lot of other types of holiday going on already. And since people were celebrating at that time anyway, it struck the church fathers and organizers as a good idea to celebrate the nativity at this time of the year too.
You said earlier this is possibly the most celebrated Christian part of the holiday. What other Christian parts of the holiday are there? I mean, I was raised under the Christian religion,
right?
But what else comes from? I mean, sending a Christmas card, is that part of the Christian religion? Buying a present?
This was much more emphasized, say, in early modern times and during the Middle Ages, when a lot of the Christmas celebration was connected with going to church and things like that. The Bean King, the Santa Claus hanging up your stocking, giving presents, that kind of stuff is the secular part. That has other, you know, other origins. Some people like to be very severely Christian about Christmas. The nativity is a straight role reversal thing. Mary and Joseph were not, there was no room in the inn, so that the child had to be born in a manger, in a stable. That is like wassail. That is like turning the social order upside down.
So that the, what many would say, the most important person was not let into the house.
Right. You know, the wise men, the three kings from the Orient who traveled that far, they had to come to the stable to do obeisance to the young Christ child. That is role reversal too. I mean, they are kings. They're coming to a stable to worship a child newly born in the stable. That's topsy-turvy land. That's role reversal like Boxing Day.
30 minutes after the hour. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Happy holidays to you from WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest today, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology. We're talking about the history of Christmas and holidays from around the world. Let me take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Graphics. They are at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, brgtshirts.com. Professor, a variety of knowledge about Christmas and it's where it comes from, and I want to get back to that because I feel like I'm sort of loosely learning bits and pieces. But in the United States, whether you want to talk about it from a religious or a secular point of view, it seems like Christmas is the most important holiday, or certainly the one that gets the most emphasis.
Yeah, definitely does. And so we're talking commercial and financial here, right? At this point, a lot of merchandisers feel that if they don't make it, you know, through the Christmas season, they'll never make it. Some huge majority of the income of many merchants, many, you know, department stores, shopping malls, things like that, is concentrated in December. Many people make more business in the pre-Christian period than pre-Christmas period than they do the rest of the year. This varies from one sort of product to another, but it's certainly the airlines do, and travel things like that.
Well, whether or not you want to talk about it from a financial point of view, I'm just bringing it up from a percentage participation point of view, whether you have the money to buy frankincense as your gift, whether you just go to your family home for the dinner.
Right.
It seems like Christmas, at least in the United States, and possibly this also works into Canada and Great Britain, is the largest participation. But there must be other countries. You mentioned being in Papua New Guinea. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned Australia at this point, the Dutch, Germany, and others. What other holidays are out there in other countries that fall into this, that in those countries are equivalent, near equivalent, bypass Christmas in terms of participation in that culture?
Okay, so let's look at some other cultures that actually don't celebrate Christmas or celebrate it minimally. I'm talking here about Islamic people, and I'm talking here also about communist Soviets in Russia, although I do not mean to imply there's a connection between these two. There is no connection between these two. Both of these are, Islam is a religion which is based on the submission of worshipers to God. It's based on the submission of worshipers to God. And therefore, you can say the role reversal has already taken place when the person converted to Islam. And so none of this role reversal stuff on Christmas makes much sense in an Islamic context. Likewise, communists believe, falsely I think, but they believe that their government came into being by a turnover of the social order in which the workers took over power. This is largely untrue. I mean, these things are run by dictatorships, you know, and military coups and things like that. But those places that do not celebrate Christmas, the traditional Russian Orthodox Christmas was extremely well celebrated, but it more or less went out of fashion. It may be coming back now in Russia, but it went out of fashion with the Soviet period when one of my friends from Russia told me, he said, "We don't celebrate Christmas the way you Americans do. We celebrate New Year's. New Year's is our big holiday." Okay? Well, that comes right after Christmas. That does bring up New Year's and its relation to Christmas, I guess. And all I can say is that we have parties on New Year's. That's the only thing I can think of. Sometimes people send New Year's cards, but we have parties in which everybody gets falling down drunk, and that is like the Bean King. That is, you know, it's an associated holiday.
What about as China becomes a larger country and India become more important, whether you want to talk about that socially, financially, et cetera, around the world, you would think that their holidays would become more visible to those in the United States?
Well, for two reasons. The New Year is probably the most visible one in China, both because that was traditionally the big holiday, although that it happens sort of later than our New Year usually. And secondly, because it is, at least by ideology, a communist nation in which the social order is already overturned, and therefore you do not need to celebrate that like in a carnival or a wassail. India is, they have their own festival of lights, which I think takes place in October. Indians are some of the most devoted religious people on earth, and they have large, spectacular holidays, but they don't coincide with the Christian ones. There are a lot of Christian people in India, as opposed to China. I think there may be some in China, but and we assume that they celebrate Christmas possibly as we do, although I wouldn't know, okay? Christmas is not, it was never what you call a cultural universal. The idea of Christmas was never something that was celebrated by all people all over the world. On the other hand, the idea of a turnabout or role reversal holiday at this time of the year was common among the Indians in British Columbia, the Northwest Coast Indians. They called this time of the year the ceremonial season. And they said that at this time of the year, the roof beam of the house, they lived in these huge wooden longhouses, the roof beam of the house turned into the Milky Way, and the outdoors became the indoors, and the indoors became the outdoors. And so they would put on plays and dramas, just like the Elizabethans, that had backdrops and scenery as if it were outdoors. And this enabled them to do this inside the house. So it was a house reversal holiday. And it took place at this time of the year. Everything they did had religious implications, but these were not Christian ones until, of course, the missionaries got there.
Thank you so much for joining us. Happy holidays. Rick Moore with WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Professor Roy Wagner, Department of Anthropology at the University of Virginia, talking about holidays around the world.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And The Hook shares its annual Year in Review. From 2011 political issues, the late night call for the Western Bypass, to those who occupied places from around the world, to possibly the most bizarre city council candidate ever, from natural disasters at Louisa County earthquake and tornado, to financial disasters, the Biscuit Run appraisal, and other memories. And Larry Sabato previews the 2012 Wonders. The Hook, joining WNRN and Sunday Morning Wake Up Call to wish everyone happy holidays. And support for WNRN today comes from L. Oppelman's holiday sales event going on now. With offers on Fender electric guitar packages, drum kits, and acoustic guitars, L. Oppelman has violins, banjos, mandolins, and music accessories. They also have offers on jewelry brands like David Yurman, Tiffany & Company, and Rolex. You can find the right gift downtown at L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Charlottesville. All right, back with our guest, Professor Wagner from UVA. Professor, Christmas and Saturnalia, Hanukkah, all seem to have, they're all located around the winter solstice.
Yeah.
Are there other major holidays that seem to be looped around the the spring solstice or the equinox? I guess it would be the summer solstice, excuse me, and the spring equinox or fall?
Let's talk a little bit about Easter. The Chinese New Year generally occurs either in very early spring or sometimes in spring. Traditionally, in Imperial China, the emperor conducted the rites on the vernal equinox, the day in spring when the sun, the night and day are of the same length. The emperor connected earth and heaven, and that was the official beginning of the year for the old Chinese Empire a long time ago. That was not only a tremendous ritual, it was the central ritual of the Chinese Empire, and it was also like a big holiday for the Chinese people. So you could say in a way that Easter, which is also a religious holiday, is in balance with Christmas. It balances out the other side of the year. But we don't really get a whole lot of holidays coming together in that spring, you know, May, June period. There are a few that are not religious, not traditional. Easter, however, for people in the Orthodox Church, the Greek and Russian Orthodox Church, Easter is celebrated just as magnificently as Christmas. They have a month of Lent before both Christmas and Easter in the Orthodox Church. And the Orthodox Church is the traditional Middle Eastern Christian church. It is the legitimate heir of Jesus's religious movement. And so it's very direct. That's a very good question, though, because, of course, we have nothing like the Christmas financial season around Easter. Nobody goes around buying Easter presents and putting them under an Easter tree. We have Easter baskets, but, you know, like these are mostly for kids, and they're sweet stuff and eggs and things like that. That holiday is related to rabbits and fertility. I'm not altogether sure why, but it goes back very far. There's just nothing like the Christmas, this Christmas season. That brings up a real interesting astronomical fact about this time of the year, as opposed to, say, the other time of the year, May, June, maybe April, when Easter usually comes. At this time of the year, the sun is in the constellations of, well, Scorpio and Sagittarius. These are the constellations, you can't see it because the sun comes up in the middle of the constellation and blots it out, right? These are the constellations in which the center of the galaxy is located. The dark cloud in Sagittarius. Behind that is the black hole. There's a gigantic black hole in the center of our galaxy around which the galaxy rotates. That is our principal source of negative energy. The Earth and our solar system actually experiences a pull from the center of the galaxy, from the black hole. The sun is the source of our positive energy, because without sunlight, nothing would grow. We wouldn't have things like oil. We wouldn't have, you know, just life would not be worth living. So we get positive energy from the sun and negative energy from the black hole. And they're both in the same part of the sky at this time of the year. So you get a lot of unusual things happening. the holidays are role reversal holidays, emphasizing both negative and positive energy.
You love that.
I do love that.
The role reversal part seems to be a crucial factor anthropologically.
I'm an anthropologist, yeah.
In nearly all the holidays that we've discussed.
Absolutely.
In some way.
That's what I'm looking at, yeah. And I'd like to emphasize that, because if you don't pay attention to that, you miss the connection between Christmas, Halloween, and Thanksgiving. To some degree, New Year's, but I'm not being big on New Year's today. All right. The opposite side. So you get, at Christmas time, Halloween, you get these starkly opposed colors like red and black, orange and black for Halloween, red and green for Christmas. Christmas is actually the biggest thing in our world that has red and green as its colors. I mean, they are Christmas colors. Orange and black is like that, and Halloween is coming more into prominence now, so we have some, sort of that thing. Now, at the opposite time of the year, in June, May, June, July, well, May and June, let's say, that's when the sun and the black hole are on opposite sides of the Earth. We're like in balance between them. That's when you get the sign Gemini, the twins.
That's me.
You a twin?
Yes, well.
Congratulations.
Astrologically.
You're a Gemini.
Yes.
I'm a Libra.
And I have twin sisters, if that matters.
Probably. It's starting to mount up, Rick.
Is it?
Starting
yeah.
to mount up there. You're doing well. Automatically, you see my estimation of you has gone up. I think twins are real special. I have a bias that way.
So. I've been told that it's difficult because I always contradict myself within the hour. I can see so many sides of the same topic.
Right, right.
That people are like, well, which side are you taking?
That is a function of twinning too. Duality, we call it in anthropology. It's very important. But you see, it's in June when people get married, when the positive and negative energies are in balance on opposite sides of the earth. They get married. When the two are together on one side of the earth, like in Sagittarius and Scorpio, then you get these role reversal holidays. Then you get both the positive and the negative energy expressed in like orange and black. You see? Things like that.
I have to say that I would have never guessed beforehand that my discussion with Professor Roy Wagner would have included conversations about my astrological sign. So we are talking with Professor Roy Wagner. This is a pre-recorded program. Thank you for listening. Sorry we're not taking calls today, but celebrating the holidays, and hopefully you are having a good time as well. Talking about Christmas and other holidays around the world and sort of how that all fits together in a cultural manner. Professor, are there... Everything, it seems, that we have talked about all has some start on a religious base.
Mm-hmm.
Are there holidays, at least anything that goes from a middle player up, that comes from more of a secular, just the cultural base that doesn't have a religious background to it?
Well, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July. We do, I think, traditionally associate our nation with God. I mean, it's a thing that Jefferson and Lincoln did, and every president will do that. But you see, the president is in a medial condition. He is the person who mediates between the people and God. And so he's always conscious of this, and we use it that way. So we do have totally secular holidays like that. You're asking me why we have so many religious ones, huh?
Well, not even why, mm-hmm. but it just seems like that the... And yeah, if, you know, certainly seems obvious once you point out Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, in the United States, we are major holidays. I mean, people certainly... you celebrate it on a Sunday, right?
Exactly.
That makes it that makes it a key holiday.
And it makes it a long weekend, which is probably what it's really about.
And the 4th of July is a day that whatever day it falls on, the banks are closed. That makes it
a key holiday
as well.
It's a national holiday.
But it just seems like that for many cultures, that it all starts from the religion.
Yeah, I think the idea of holidays as being particular days of the calendar, days of the year, started with the medieval church, the medieval Catholic Church, assigning days to different saints. So, for instance, Christmas could be the day of Saint Nicholas, for instance, you see? Assigning these days to different saints. In the Middle Ages, our ancestors living in Europe, if your child was born on the day of a particular saint, Saint Matthew, Saint John, Johannistag in German, you named the child Matthew or John, depending on what saint's day it was the child was born on. I guess you could name him Nicholas if he was born on Christmas, but that adjusted the holidays and festivals connected with the saints, with the calendar, and was an important force in keeping the calendar going, you know, during the Middle Ages.
But what happened when we switched calendar bases? Didn't we? And again,
there was a reform. Yes.
Yes. Silly me, but we went from Gregorian to Roman, or from Roman to Gregorian, whichever.
Exactly. That is why the traditional Russian Orthodox Christmas, people would say, is late. You know, that it's celebrated in January. Well, it's not January according to them, because they were running on the Gregorian calendar, right? And so for a long time, that was the case, that people perceived the Orthodox Christmas to be different, because it was, you know, the calendars were running differently. These are all calendric holidays.
53 after the hour, as we talk here about holidays around the world with our guest, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA Anthropology. Professor, you know, less than 10 minutes here. I want to ask some questions about how customs are created, because that's part of what holidays are about, correct? Is following the customs that you have been told, as well as creating some for yourself. Is it all just about being repetitive? Is that what a custom is?
It's what a calendar is. Okay, I get your drift. I get your question. Is a custom something that you can invent or create, or is a custom must it be something from the past? I think most people think of their customs that way, in terms of the past, at least in Papua New Guinea, where they have a word, kastam, they call it. And they connected with the ancestors. The ancestors are very important. You do things in that way because the ancestors did them in that way.
Is that a way of showing your thank you or your...
Social conformity, thank you, honoring the ancestors, and so on. Now, we know that the custom of Thanksgiving was not officialized before Abraham Lincoln, who did two things. He instituted the date, the calendar date for Thanksgiving.
Gave us the long weekend.
And pardoned the first turkey.
Ooh.
Yep. Yeah, Abraham Lincoln he had a great sense of humor, which he was not averse to using for public and political occasions.
I asked him to participate in a program in the past, but I never heard back.
From Abe?
Yeah.
He's probably too busy.
Oh, true.
Yeah. You know, he's up there in Washington, and he's holding down this chair in that big white marble building. Anyway, so Lincoln did, in fact, as president, initiate a new custom which would not have been an official holiday or official custom had he not done it. Most Americans by that time were celebrating some sort of harvest festival in the fall at that time, and many of them did call it Thanksgiving. Some of them called it a harvest festival. Probably different ethnicities had their versions of it, right? Hanukkah is an ethnic Jewish festival, for instance. It is not, strictly speaking, so much a part of the religion as it is an ethnic custom that originated among Jews, I suppose Ashkenazim Jews in Eastern Europe. It refers to the Holy Land and it refers to their religion in many ways, but I think that Jewish scholars might agree that it is an ethnic festival. Okay, it comes with the people, with their customs. So it's hard to answer your question, Rick. It's been known, people have been known to invent or innovate customs, officially at least, like Thanksgiving. You might say, well, Lincoln would not have made that official if there wasn't something like it already existing. Yeah, that's probably true too. So it's a debatable point. It's a difficult point to, you know, like to figure out.
This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And support today is coming from The Backyard, the UVA Corner's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch and then a pub food menu until close. For more information, it's 434-202-8215, thebackyarduva.com. And they have a Facebook page. And stay tuned, because at noon, WNRN's Les Temps Perdue with Drew Thompson will be here. It's a special Les Temps with a focus on U2 and Pearl Jam. And Les Temps Perdue brought to you in part by Caliente. All right, just about 1 minute left, Professor. And I'd like you to share the most important thing that people need to know from the hour today about Christmas and holidays around the world.
Now, you're asking me to synthesize, to make a synthesis.
And it's really difficult for professors. I always challenge them to tone it down for the last 60 seconds.
It's our job. Well, so I think that, as you pointed out, I spent a lot of time emphasizing this thing about turnover, topsy-turvy, role reversal, as characterizing all the holidays that happen at this time of the year, right? And how does gift exchange, buying gifts for your relatives and friends, how does that fit into it? Perfectly. You're buying them off. Just like the wealthy in London used to buy off the crowds in the streets by putting, you know, like putting food and drink out for them, right?
All right. I think we're going to finish up with that. I love that. So hopefully you were bought off very nicely in the last day or so. Thank you once again, Professor.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
All right. And we will see you after the new year.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Katherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.